from New York City.
The Comedy Cellar and Rethink Production present
Live from America Podcast.
We will make America great again.
How about new, you crazy Dutch bastard?
Live from America Podcast.
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
No. Excuse me. Just so you understand.
We can't be the stupid country anymore.
Live from America Podcast.
I believe we can keep the promise of our founding. The idea that if you're willing to work hard, it doesn't matter who you are, or where you come from, or what you look like, or where you love. It doesn't matter whether you're black or white, or Hispanic or Asian, or Native American, or young or old, or rich or poor, able, disabled, gay or straight. You can make it here in America if you're willing to try.
It's just words, folks. It's just words.
This is Live from America Podcast with Noam Dorman and Haddam Gab.
Okay, good evening and welcome to Live from America Podcast with Noam Dorman and Haddam Gab right here from the Comedy Cellar in New York City. Best comedy club in the country. You like that introduction so
far? It's very nice. Go ahead.
Thank you. All right, we have a great show. I've been actually waiting for this show for a while. Because it has, one of my favorite guests, and I was really looking forward to have you in the show. So we have Karen J. Greenberg. Welcome to the show. She's a historian, professor, and author. She's also the director of the Center on National Security at Fordham University School of Law. Welcome. Welcome
Thank
to the show.
I know his accent is thick, but did he get the introduction?
It's not. Did you notice that I have an accent?
She's a direct. What did you say? Unnatural security. What did you call it?
That's what it says.
She checks at Homeland Security.
Actually,
while you're
it
speaking,
says. So. The Center on National Security. Isn't that the right name?
The Center on... Did you understand what he said?
You know what's funny? I knew exactly...
The Center on National Security. You know what's helpful? Use a little space between your words.
Okay, you know what's helpful?
Okay. Every time...
You know, your mother.
You know... I can't say that to you. You know what's funny? When I was preparing
Okay, we call it. No, let's pull it back.
No, we're not pulling it back now. Too late. So when I was saying like the Center on National... I was like... On national, really? I was like, Noam's gonna make fun of this, but this is
you knew it didn't sound right.
Yeah, hey, but it's time, on Wikipedia.
All right,
and I'm your friend. I'm the only one who helps you.
Every time Haddam speaks and an IED doesn't go off,
there's a lot to talk about.
Yes.
We have a guest. First of all,
can I introduce my best friend too?
Yes, of course.
Tony Darrow, welcome back to New York,
hi,
comedian.
Noam. Hi, Tony. Good to see you.
And of course, Stephen Calabria, our producer, and.
You used to work for Karen. Mm-hmm. Can I call you Karen?
Of course.
Professor Greenberg? I don't know what the question
is.
Karen is good.
Karen's okay.
You can call me Hatton too.
All right. Fine. So before we get into...
I have an exclusive, can I say it?
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys know, the FBI director was fired.
Whoa! That's big news. J. Edgar Hoover was fired?
Exclusive for a Live from America podcast. So I'm sorry to... Karen, what do you think of that?
I was shocked. I was just like everybody else. I think it's starting to sink in. I think it puts just about everything that the country was thinking about in a new light.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to, I don't think it's going to go away as a threshold moment. I don't think that, after 2 days or a week or a month, it's going to be, oh yeah, he fired Jim Comey. I think this was a major event and it's going to have major repercussions.
Well, can I just ask you, have you said that at all in the last year about Trump? Anything that Trump's done that this is going to, like the tape?
Access Hollywood tape? You're saying he's saying there's one thing after another people say, oh, this is it. This
no,
is really it this time.
Yeah,
I'm one of those people.
What I've said is, if he goes down this path, something really bad could happen. This time I'm saying something really bad happened. This isn't about going down this path. This is a bad thing.
Why do you think he didn't ask him for his resignation?
Because he wanted to do it extremely quickly and not give him a chance to do anything he could to protect the investigation. And probably
to preserve evidence, you mean?
Possibly. Hmm. Possibly. I think he wanted it to be quick. He wanted no preparation. I think he had him good and relaxed. If he didn't fire him in January, he was safe for the rest 6.5 years of his term. And it's all surmising, but that seems to me what it was. Not any different than what happened with the U.S. attorney here in New York, Preet Bharara, who was investigating Donald Trump for, we don't actually know all the things he was, what he was investigating him. And Trump went out of his way to go and say, I'm going to keep you. Let's make a deal. Relaxed him, let him go on at pace, probably with no sense of urgency of having to do anything particularly quickly.
Right.
And then fired him summarily. This seems to me, that seemed to me the early version of this. And if you want to go around and fire everybody who seems to be looking into you, that's one thing, but it's not really the behavior you expect from the President of the United States, who insists he's innocent. So why does he have to fire these guys?
But the thing is, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
He doesn't have to answer to anybody if the Republican Party won't.
That's not true.
Hold him.
That's not true. If account. Somebody like Preet Bharara, that's absolutely not true.
Oh, if Tony. Tony.
God, Tony. Jesus.
Stop lying, Tony. Stop lying.
The show was going so well.
For example, if Preet Bharara built a case against him, he's a prosecutor, not the FBI. Right. If he built a case against him and found that he was guilty of committing this crime, that crime, or that crime, it has nothing to do with Congress. That has to do with indicting somebody for a crime.
No, but if he fires him.
Yeah, but he fires him, that can't happen. Right.
And Congress doesn't do anything about it.
Well, you'll see. I don't think Congress right now looks like they're rolling over for this one. But I think, look, John McCain yesterday says he has every right to fire him, which he does. And then today he pulled back from that, which is basically, I'm not sure he had the grounds to do this. It's going to sink in. They're going to get a sense of it. People, you know how you've seen these protests around the country about health care, about this, that, and the other thing? Who knows what we're going to see? And I don't know what else is going on inside Maine FBI, you know, the Washington FBI, but you can be sure this didn't make people feel comfortable. So you're right. Congress could play a facilitating role, but at some point the steamroll will happen.
But they have to have a special prosecutor now. It can't appoint a guy to invest.
Not necessarily. Mitch McConnell doesn't think that they should.
Well,
I don't know. The New York Times published a list of, you know, of everybody who was support, everybody in Congress who was supporting independent, you know, prosecute, a special prosecutor, and everybody who seemed to be on board with this firing, et cetera, et cetera. And, I still think it's too early to say where this is going to play out, and it's not going to take a lot. It's the kind of thing where if one or two Republicans could separate themselves from this, then I think, you know, it could make a huge difference. It doesn't have to be a massive change. But again, I'm the ultimate optimist. No, it's true, ask Stephen.
This is where I come from. You know, we all agree that in a criminal trial, we think it's a good thing, before we decide what the truth is, to hear the best defense of the defendant, mm-hmm. correct? That the adversarial process.
Well, first, let's stop you. We believe in a criminal trial.
No, I'm not.
I'm just saying, you got to get to the trial.
Yeah, no, I'm saying here.
Yes.
That I find myself trying to look for devil's advocate positions, to force myself to be devil's advocate, to try to understand what happened rather than just to have one big mass confirmation bias of, oh, he did this. So the things that come to my mind in no particular order. First of all, J. Edgar Hoover lingered for years and years and years, supposedly because he was afraid of the consequences of firing a FBI chief who had something over on him. The first thing that came to my mind is, why would Trump humiliate this guy and fire him in such a public way if this guy has damning information on him? You want to speak to that? I have a whole list of things.
So that's a good. That's good. I like that.
What I said was.
I like that too. No. You're assuming a personality to Trump that he is not shown to have. You're assuming somebody who thinks.
No, I'm not assuming. But your answer could be his personality is just erratic, and that's.
No, it's not just that he's erratic. It's that the cause and effect that you're thinking that he would have thought through three steps like that is not what's going on. This is a guy who wants everybody to think he's right because he says he's right, and who wants to show that he's a strong man. And the consequences of, maybe this will come out, he thinks he'll silence the next guy.
So you think that, A, he made this decision without anybody else in the room who might have brought these things up to him, and B, that he didn't do any cost-benefit analysis that he's just walking into a buzzsaw. He's going to...
It's the B. I don't know about the A. He might have listened or not listened, but I think that this was not really... For example, let me give you just evidence on my side of this, okay? Which none of us could believe, but now I believe it. I get it. Apparently, the White House was shocked that the Democrats were not on board with this, that there was any kind of blowback.
Yeah, I actually said that to you today.
Now, that's fast. And at first, I didn't believe it. Then I called some people, and then it turned out that that is actually the case from insiders who verified this. Okay, how could that be the case? The reason is that he believed what was written in that letter, that this is Democratic language. These are the Democrats and Republican former officials associated in some form with Department of Justice and elsewhere that say that Hillary Clinton, you know, that talk about the Hillary Clinton episode, etc., and how Comey overstepped his
bounds. So actually, they were right in the sense that the Colbert audience cheered and the View audience cheered, but the smart of the elites didn't, you know, kind of corrected their people. No, you're not supposed to be happy about this. But so
they were surprised by that, and they were surprised because they didn't think it through.
But don't take me off my
No,
but they were happy for a different reason.
Hold on. So to follow your line of thought, then how long do we wait and not see Comey either come forward with something or leak something that we know came from Comey before we conclude Comey didn't have him any particular facts that are damning of Trump?
It doesn't matter whether he did. It only matters what Trump thought he had.
But he wasn't allowed to continue the investigation, so who knows what he might have found.
So, for example, let's just give example another side of this. There's an inspector general. Inspector generals are the people that oversee the various departments. And
I know, but for Tony's sake, go ahead. So
the inspector general, after this Hillary stuff, the inspector general was told to do an investigation of Comey, which he's doing. But they could have waited for that report. They didn't. So just
no. So and then because I'm not. I these like if this was somebody else, the points that I'm bringing up would really be like would sway me. I understand that it's Trump, so it's just hard to credit him with any kind of rationality. But to me, when somebody like the Godfather, keep your friends closer, your enemies closer. When somebody fires somebody, lets them go, and really with a bloody nose, you think, well, that he must not have anything on him. Otherwise, he would never do it in such a way. B, I heard Bob Woodward talk for a long time this morning about the fact that the investigation goes on. Comey actually isn't even in charge of the investigation. It's the Justice Department that's in charge of the investigation. That the FBI agents themselves will freak out if anybody tries to interrupt and they'll start leaking like sieves. So,
but they need money to have an investigation.
Well, in a way, if they do anything to cut off the funds, whatever it is. In a way, this may bring about, assuming the worst, this may bring about exactly the result, exactly the opposite result of what Trump wanted. This may just really make the thing bubble up more quickly.
Depends on how scared people are.
Scared of what?
Scared of Trump. There are a lot of people who are scared of Trump. You might not be. I might not be. But there are people who are scared of him.
Oh, no, but now you're verging in conspiracy theories.
No, I don't think so. Oh, no.
I'm scared of him.
We can talk about conspiracy theories. Please.
Go ahead.
You're going to explain the absence of something. Well, they're just scared. It's like, well, how do I argue with that?
I'm scared his action will be,
I'm saying why isn't somebody? There've been surveillance. They have documents. They have phone conversations. They have all kinds of stuff on Flynn. Everything. Why wouldn't this be the catalyst for something to get leaked out that the American people say, oh, there's really something there?
What do you think went on at the meeting between Trump and Lavrov today?
I have no idea.
Why do you think the American press was left out and the Russian press was left in?
Because he doesn't want the American press there badgering him after this.
Okay, and do you think that's okay as an American citizen? Do you think
he met with the foreign minister
and that we don't know what happened at this particular time when what he's being accused of by Jim Comey is potential collusion with the Russians?
The press wouldn't be there to witness the meeting under any circumstance. He just didn't want to take questions. I don't think that really affects...
No, that's not right.
Let me ask you another question. Do you care?
Obama famously was I agree with you, like as an American, but I don't think it's exactly unique of Trump to keep the press at an arm's distance.
Do you care whether there was collusion or not with the Russians?
Yes.
Why?
Because I would like, well, it's funny because I said to him earlier, it's not the first thing on my mind. I care more that it seems clear to me now that they are not in bed with the Russians now after the Syria thing, the way Tillerson spoke about Putin or whatever it is. It doesn't seem, if they weren't, if they had been in collusion, it seems like that marriage has broken up. That would worry me more. But I care.
After marriage broke up,
it worried me more if I saw them kind of doing the Russians' bidding or laying down for Russia, and they saw signs that there was an ongoing thing here. But if you don't want a dishonest president, you don't want a criminal president, and you don't want anybody who could be blackmailed.
Well, that was the concern with the Sally Yates hearing on Monday.
Yeah. So for those reasons, I don't want that. Similarly, I was worried that the Russians had the 30,000 Clinton emails because you don't want her to be able to be blackmailed.
But I don't think she'll be blackmailed. But anyway, is it normal to get fired this way without having somebody else in line for it?
Okay.
Or
so here's the answer.
Yeah.
There's been one other FBI director that's been fired in the history of the United States. It was by Bill Clinton for somebody on whom they had found evidence and you know, it was a concluded investigation of an ethics violation because of taxes, non-payment of taxes, you know, so a workaround.
Non-controversial firing.
Non-controversial in any way. So let's just talk about the role of what the FBI director's role is. It's unique in any position in Washington. It is the only position that is 10 years. It is way longer than any other position. It is 2 years longer than any president can possibly serve.
Mm-hmm.
That was an intentional signal. And it was, you know, if you go to legislative history, you'll see it. It's an intentional signal that this position is so important that the president should not be able to come in and willy-nilly say, you can't investigate me. And so the intent, whether or not they built in enough precautions and said, you know, like with the nuclear button, you know, you got to ask this guy and this guy and this guy and go through all these levels. The intent was that it shouldn't happen on a whim, that it should happen, as you said, with conclusive evidence, and that the sanctity of the position should be taken extremely seriously because of what it symbolizes.
Yeah.
And by violating this, he has violated yet another American institution. He went after the courts. He went after the justices. He's now gone after the head of the FBI. I don't even care. Let's take the merits aside. The idea, you know, that he would say, you know what? Who cares about the 10-year appointment? Who cares about the independence of the FBI director in terms of what it represents? To me, this is one more example of his complete disrespect for things that I care deeply about. So that's what bothers me.
On the issue of him putting his own self-interest above the importance of our respect for America, or not being corrosive to American institutions, I agree with you 1,000%, but what's the joke? He's being the scorpion is a scorpion. Like, why'd you think that's Trump? I mean, you can't expect anything different from him.
Okay,
but clearly I agree with you. But I did think about, I said, well, let me, for the sake of argument, let me assume he's not in bed with the Russians and literally is not dirty.
Yeah.
Why would he do this? And I came up with an answer.
Okay.
And you tell him what you think.
Wrong. Which anyway, let me
and the no, more and then the more I say hear. The answer to myself, the more I kind of say, you know what, I mean, this could really be the case.
So Ted, say
this guy Comey is a fucking walking. Excuse me, is a walking. We're used to
okay.
we're used to like
it's okay.
hookers and sex therapists.
Go for it.
Is a walking disaster. He's a publicity hound. He's gone after everybody. He spent 2 years dirtying Hillary Clinton's name, only to dirty her the most in the conversation where he cleared her. What kind of man wields the power of investigating somebody, determining that they're innocent, yet dragging her, essentially just criticizing the way she did her job when she's running for president? It's outrageous. It never ends with him. He drags it on for years and years and years. He embarrassed himself at the latest hearings. He seems to love it. And Trump says to himself, I have 3.5 more years here. I am never going to get past this guy. This guy is going to hang on. He's going to make my life miserable. I don't want to see him. Every time I see him, I feel like he's making me nervous. He will drag me through the mud. And maybe after 3.5 years, just like he did to Hillary, say, and by the way, we found nothing, but he did blah, blah, blah. I need to get rid of this guy. How do I get rid of him? Oh, this guy that everybody respects will write this letter for me? Let's get rid of him. And this is the last shoe to drop. And then I'll replace, and my whole theory will soon depend on this, and we'll know. And then I'll replace him with somebody respected and beyond reproach.
Don't say Giuliani.
That, nobody, that was my next question.
No, I'm not saying who it is. I'm saying if he is smart enough to replace him with somebody like a Leon Panetta or somebody respected that way.
Let's bet.
No, it's not worth betting. I'm just saying, then I would have to say, you know what?
I'm betting on Ray Kelly.
That's he's got to point him with somebody that nobody could think would do his bidding.
That's my
Ray Kelly, I think, would fit. So do you think
CNN had like six names.
Well, here's the example.
Ray on the list?
Yeah.
Was he?
He was, and...
guys, 1 second.
Giuliani and Chris Christie.
Yeah, okay.
Giuliani and Chris Christie would prove your point 100%. If Ray Kelly was do I think that Ray Kelly is going to be in bed covering up for collusion with the Russians? It's tough for me to believe that.
Okay, so let's separate these issues.
Yeah.
Let me start with the last one, which is that I totally agree with you. Who he appoints matters, and how this story is told in the future, the near future and the far future, is going to have to do everything. There were two lists that came out today that I saw. One was that list, mm-hmm. which had, Christie, etc. on it.
Christie?
Yeah. Christie, Giuliani, not going to happen. I didn't know Ray Kelly was on it, but that's what I was hearing before the inauguration. And then another list of people I'd never heard of. One thing about this administration that concerns me terribly, forgetting all this, is its lack, and this goes to the institutional attacks, its lack of respect for professionalism and professionals. He appoints people who don't know the business they're in, whether they're secretaries...
On domestic issues, and foreign national security issues, he's
yes
been
and
very
no.
good.
Yes and no. Let me just push back on that. Yeah. It's great to have somebody who, you know, in a couple of positions, but to gut a State Department so that there actually isn't anybody working there, so that staff positions are empty, so that there's only two confirmed ambassadors of the entire realm of ambassadors, it's unheard of. That is there is no professional diplomatic corps working right
What's
now.
What's causing that?
He won't appoint anybody.
Why?
Same things in justice. How many U.S. attorneys do we have right now?
I don't know. Very few.
Because they're not appointing anybody. He's focused on appointing judges because he wants to get conservative judges in, and that makes sense, actually, you know, from the point of view of that. But in the larger scheme of not respecting professionals for what they know and what they do and who could advise him, and that's what worries me about this appointment. Ray Kelly's a professional. He could run the FBI. Some people might like his politics, they might not, but he makes perfect sense. I know him well. I think he'd be better than Christie or
would he cover up
no
Trump.
That's not how I understand
how about
Ray
this
Kelly
this is how Trump
way.
Wins this so, is how so Trump
if,
win.
So if yes. he were to appoint Ray Kelly he is going to survive this.
Remember this, it's a 10-year appointment. So Ray Kelly is how old?
I don't know.
I mean, 50? 50s, right?
No, he's probably 71. I'm not sure it's a practical appointment, but it's a legitimate appointment.
How about this? What if he appointed? I know it would never happen.
He should appoint a woman. Go ahead.
But Sally Yates. That would get. Just think about that. Everybody would be like, "Wait, what?"
And then
he would be off.
Let me tell you something about Sally Yates. That, you know, for all of, you know, everybody making fun of her and saying things about her, what she did was pretty remarkable. The Office of Legal Counsel inside the Justice Department wrote a memo for the Muslim ban, which they did not tell her about, which she then obviously discovers because it's public, and says, this is not lawful. You realize that in the Bush administration, that same Office of Legal Counsel, which apparently has insufficient oversight to this day, was in collusion with the White House writing memos about torture and related things.
John Yoo.
And Gonzalez. Whether or not they got wind of it, not one person in the Justice Department stood up and said, guess what? This is unlawful, even though it was unlawful under domestic, military, international, every other law you can think of. So it was pretty, you know, important what she did for getting even this context, which is that this is a possible route that a Department of Justice employee in a position of importance can take, which is to say something's unlawful. So, you know, I mean, I think we have to give her a lot of credit for that, given that it would have been great to see that, you know, 15 years ago.
Yeah, I have no problem with Yates.
Yeah.
I think
there was something, though, with when they were trying to get John Ashcroft was in the hospital.
That's later. That was later. Yeah.
Because
it was secret before that, because just like they bypassed her on the Muslim memo, they had bypassed him on some original memos. Because there's only so far, you know, Department of Justice officials take their positions very seriously in terms of as Sally Yates said in her hearing the other day, they represent the Constitution, not the president.
So if Trump was to go about choosing somebody who was reputable and someone that you thought could carry out the tasks of the
position. And happened to be a personal friend of hers, yeah.
Correct. yeah, right. So then all of this would have just been for naught, or what?
No, the question is, if he appoints somebody reputable and the investigation is allowed to continue along whatever lines it goes on, and if the deal of you get to be head of the FBI is not the other side of it, but this investigation ends. And the thing is like, what are we so afraid of about finding this out? What's wrong?
But who decides? Doesn't it the Justice Department that decides the investigation ends, not the FBI director? That's what Woodward said today. I didn't know that.
Well, first of all, it's a relationship between the information that the FBI has and that the prosecution, which is also involved in the investigation, whether or not they decide to prosecute. So it's not quite as clear and clean cut as he says. Okay. In terms of deciding to prosecute, yes. And it looks like the bulk of this investigation is being driven right now by the Justice Department, which is what they said when Sally Yates was fired, which was that she was a point person for the Russia thing. But to think that the FBI is not in control of this, why do you think Jim Comey asked for these extra resources? He asked for extra resources for the FBI to be able to look forward in, you know, into this and deeper into it.
To fulfill the mandate that the Justice Department has given him.
The FBI is part of the Department of Justice. Like, it is, right?
Right.
So it's not a separate,
They take marching orders from above.
In theory. And while the FBI director is very powerful, the attorney general is, on paper, in theory, his boss. So.
All right. So, I mean, I just on two other issues that have come up about that, I made an analogy, you might like this anyway, that, you know, in employment law, as an employer, I have at-will employees. And I can fire them for any reason I want, except if it's because of their race or something like that. And I think that's the answer.
You get around that.
But that's the answer to the argument. Of course, Trump is within his rights to fire him, except you can't fire him for a reason of trying to suppress an investigation.
Correct.
And so it's not hypocrisy to say, I mean, if Trump was not being investigated in this Russian thing, I think everybody would be happy to see him fire Comey. I don't think anybody who's objecting to the firing it's just the way it worked out. Yeah, he's there now. And even though we hate him, it's better than firing him to cover for Trump.
He did it in a way that made it look and feel like it had to be done immediately, that he couldn't do it in a procedural way. He couldn't do it in a let's get my team together and fire him. They didn't ask for his resignation. They didn't do anything.
They didn't even tell him.
No,
well, that's very.
Yeah.
They didn't even tell him.
He saw it on the news. Wait, yeah.
Very corporate.
And they sent the bodyguard. Yes. And they sent the bodyguard, right? His private bodyguard to deliver the message, which is its own message.
That's weird. So,
but that's the way the way you do it in corporate America. You go and you pack up their stuff, you take it, and then you tell them, and a security car and escorts you out. I'm not defending it. I'm just saying it's not
okay.
And
you're bringing up a really other point, which is that one of the things that Donald Trump ran on was the government needs to be a business. And his critics, when he was running, would say, look, government's not a business. You're going to be surprised when you get there. You can't run it like a business. He's made the calculation he can. And that means he doesn't need a State Department. He doesn't need all these departments filled because he's the CEO and people can come and go. How many firings have there been since he started?
He's all over the place.
It's too many.
But I have to say, now this is the last time I'll say that we can move on to something else. If I were innocent and I were Donald Trump, I would be looking to get rid of this Comey guy. He is going to make my life miserable for years. Mm-hmm. He's bad news.
What if it wasn't about you? Let's forget about Donald Trump being guilty, because one of the things that, you know, they call it Team Trump.
Yeah.
What if his associates are guilty? What if it's not just Flynn? What if it's Flynn and three others here and three overs there? What if there's a whole array? And what if he didn't even know about it, which is possible? Is he responsible for not knowing?
Yes and no.
Do you think he knows now?
I don't know. It's a good question.
I don't think he might not. Let's just to put this back to you. Yeah. We don't know what he knows.
We don't know.
We don't know. We don't know what Pence knows. We don't know what either one of them
I trust Pence more on that and on gay conversion.
Well, because you were successful, but most people.
But the inquiry isn't just about Trump. The inquiry is about the people around him.
Yeah.
And if he didn't know, he should have known.
Yeah.
right?
Now let me ask you this. As an American, it's going to be hard to met because we,
yes, you asking me?
Because not you, as an American. because we hate Trump so much, right? But, you know, my father used to talk about burning down the house, get rid of the cockroaches. When does the cure become worse than the disease? In other words, like, that's kind of what I was saying before. Like, if I'm satisfied that whatever his sleazy associates did, don't forget, he had the dregs of the world working for him in his campaign. No one else would even come work for him. I mean, Flynn was fired by Obama. When we met Rothkopf, the first thing he said, everybody says Flynn is crazy. This guy's bad news. That's all you ever heard from him, but Flynn is bad news. But Trump needed a warm body with some resume, right?
Not just some resume. He picked people who had been in trouble before, like Sessions.
Because they're the only ones who come to him.
Well, whatever, or it was people he could trust to be loyal to him because they had, you know, marks against them that they really needed to overcome.
Can I ask you a question? Why Flynn was pretty, he's pretty open about his anti-Muslim sentiments. They're pretty extreme. He didn't hide them. How is he working as a foreign agent for Turkey? How do those two things meld?
You know, I guess the world of money, power, and intrigue, and the
really because he was so extreme that I was really surprised.
His answer would be it's radical Islam, which is his issue.
Turkey.
What's it? No, he sees Turkey as a listen. It's money, obviously. That's the answer.
It's just weird because he didn't say radical Islam. He said Islam is
unacceptable.
Look at Gorka. Look at this guy. In the White House.
Oh, Sebastian Gorka. Yeah. Is he a fraud? I've heard that he's a fraud.
Well, terrorism experts have always thought, you know, he's not really one of them. But they like him. He's talk about anti-Muslim. You know, he's really sees this as a clash of civilizations that we have to win. And he still works there. You know, he may not have the title of, you know, that he originally had, but he's still there.
So getting back to the cure being worse than a disease, like if we get bogged down in 3 years of trying to catch Trump's subordinates and whatever it is, at some point, I mean, you may be happy about it because you actually don't want Trump's agenda to move forward, but just at some point you say, listen, if there's nothing really there which is bearing on today,
and
the president is not involved in it, it's like, all right, you know, how much are we going to let this paralyze us? It worries me. You know, I was against, just so you know that and I was proven 100% right that Bill Clinton could be sued for sexual harassment while he was in the White House.
Yeah, and you know what happened during the hearings for Bill Clinton was Al-Qaeda got strong and powerful, and we took our eye off the mark, and we were not paying attention to what absolutely mattered. So I take
the president
point.
Getting bogged down in something, which is actually bad for the country, and in the end, what are we going to get? So we're going to get some Trump guys and they were dirty, whatever it is. In the meantime, the president's bogged down and what happened to Bill Clinton is more likely to happen to Donald Trump because he doesn't even have Bill Clinton's brain.
But screwing an intern, which is not a good thing.
Yeah.
But screwing an intern and being beholden, either you or your cabinet, to a foreign power.
Him or the cabinet. But I was talking about...
Yeah, but I'm saying are two different things.
Yes. Yes.
So it's really different, and the foreign policy issue that got buried, you know, took their attention off of it for the Monica Lewinsky hearings. The foreign policy issue today is Russia,
But I don't think you totally disagree with me because it's totally a scenario there where they find nothing, they get bogged down.
I think they should do it as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
I think they should do it. They should give them all the resources they need. They'll come with one or two bad guys, and that'll be it. And
they should give them a deadline.
And they could. They could have said to Comey, you can have your money, but you have X amount of months or weeks or whatever it is to do this. They could have brokered a deal. They didn't want to. But what I wanted to say here is that, I mean, there's like a silver lining, which is only because I'm always looking for a silver lining to like bad things. And the silver lining
is... How many bad things happen to you?
I mean, in the world that I look at, you know, torture, terror, blah. The silver lining is that this is the biggest challenge to democracy since in my lifetime. Bigger than Watergate.
So it's the Alien and Sedition Act.
No, it's huge.
Yeah.
And so either the country's going to get it together and figure out a way to handle this civilly, rationally, and with some candor, or it's not. And if it doesn't, you can kiss goodbye to a certain kind of integrity in government. So this is actually you asked me how important this moment is. This is extremely important. Firing the director of the FBI without any kind of process is extraordinary. And there's no other person you fire like that. But he's the head of law enforcement. There is no other comparable you can fire, though. You know, you can't fire the, you know, elected officials. But you could fire people, but none of them have this symbolic value at all.
Yeah. Well, I told Stephen that I think if he hires the wrong person to be head of the FBI and it really begins to stink, you're going to see swing state Republicans turn against him.
And here's another point. The thought that he did this without having a name to put forward tells me also that this happened like this, that he may have been saying he was going to do it, but something happened. And I was the Sally Yates hearing that, and it wasn't Sally Yates. It was Clapper, that you went into that hearing and here's what I thought going into the hearing. One, she's going to get decimated. This is going to be horrible. We're going to feel bad. And two, we're going to get some sense of, you know, there's going to be a debate about the Russia thing. But neither thing happened. She came out of there. Everybody, you know, a lot of people loved her, blah, blah, blah. But she survived. This was not a decimation of any sort. And you came out of there. It wasn't a question of if Russia had some involvement with some people. It was that. And the only thing was, what was it that happened? Not if. So that actual hearing transformed. I couldn't believe it afterwards. I was like, do you get what happened? Well, they got it. And it happened very quickly. And not having a person, just to your point, a lot of this would have gone away. Said, firing Jim Comey, I'm putting in place this person.
Yeah.
That's a whole, he doesn't.
You're talking about in a different world. I mean, in the same moment that you're describing, Trump's spokesperson, Sarah Huckabee, saying, like, we've already moved past that. Like,
she called it an atrocity.
We're done with that. We've moved on from that. Like, what? Is that how it works? You just move on? Like, if I'm under investigation by the police, I just tell them, you know what? I'm past that. I'm not.
So let's move on from Tony's point and talk about.
That's how they're talking.
They keep
about
trying,
it.
And then somebody calls them on it, and then they retract. I mean, there's a lot of this. You know, the Sean Spicer, or she'll say something, and then and then they'll pull back on it.
Sean Spicer is the worst person at his job that I think I've ever seen anywhere.
Actually, I think given the circumstances, he's probably doing better than a lot of people.
He's
would.
Doing what they want him to do.
No, he's not even.
I'm with him.
He's not even a good bullshit artist, and he should be. He's a PR person. He should be that.
Yeah,
it's easy to not answer a question.
I mean,
He's horrible.
He's terrible.
He's horrible. He's
been doing it for 18 years.
Politics now is more interesting than anything else. Like, everybody's talking about him. So, you know.
But dude, I just imagine like him
and impersonating him.
You know, hooked up to the medical machines where you could see his vital signs. You know, I mean, that guy goes to a fucking. Oh my God.
He must change his shirt like 5 times a day.
Yeah, he must. He's like sweating like, what is like Albert Brooks in broadcast news. Like, how can he put up with that? Poor guy.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's crazy. So let's talk about Guantanamo Bay.
Oh, wait, but one more thing. You know Comey.
I do know Comey. So, I mean, he's not like a friend, but I do
he's not,
know him.
He's not a friend.
He's not
Do you support the way he treated Hillary Clinton?
I think he really miscalculated everything on the way up to the election. I think the July thing, he never should have stated. He should have stayed within, hit the bounds of what you're supposed to do as an FBI director. He shouldn't have made the first statement. He should have made the second statement. You know, I don't attribute to him as evil intentions as other people do, but I definitely think he made a mistake.
And I don't
politically not savvy, either of those things.
Yeah. I don't attribute evil intentions at all to him. I attribute actually kind of honorable intentions, if those even come to play. That's on the ego. I think I see an ego-related thing there, just kind of, you know, just enamored and seduced by this kind of national power that he had.
Well, I don't know what it was.
Shut up, Comey.
He is the head of the FBI. That might have, you know.
It's interesting because he was supposed to testify Thursday, right, before Congress, and now he's not, and his deputy is, but he is, I think, going to be called to testify. I guess next week, maybe. I forget what it was, and that'll be interesting.
What if he just came out and said everything you heard is true? There is a P tape. We have a connection between Trump and Putin. He just like said that.
Well, that's the thing. They're going to ask him, you know, basically, this is a man who's defined himself as somebody who has tremendous integrity about things. And so, he's not going to reveal classified evidence. He's not going to, you know, there's nothing about
it. It'd be great if he did.
I have a question. You said you spoke earlier about the dearth of personnel in the State Department, et cetera. What happens if he just doesn't get around to appointing a replacement?
Oh, to Comey?
Mm-hmm.
The deputy FBI director continues in the role.
At some point, Congress, this is something Congress will, you know, I mean, that's just one thing Donald Trump is doing. He's saying, you know, how far can I push away the profession of presidency and get away with it? At what point will I get stopped? You know, and the question is, at what point will he get stopped? And so that's a very good question. You know, you're basically, what if he doesn't, isn't going to appoint anybody? Well, that's, you know, we haven't quite as a people gotten to that point of, you know, terror. Mm-hmm. But that's, yeah, I mean, then it's proof that he really does not hold in high esteem the institutions that contribute to this democracy. He doesn't respect the courts, which is the thing that matters to me.
He doesn't respect the press.
He doesn't respect the press. He doesn't and if he had lost, remember the idea was that if he lost, he was going to challenge it because he couldn't possibly lose. So that's, you know, the political process. And so, you know, and he ran, he has a base that very much seems to agree with his distaste for the way things exist within the institutions.
Now, look, I made some people mad by saying this before, but I'll say it again because I think it's fair. Franklin Roosevelt, when he didn't get his way, he tried to change the number of people on the Supreme Court in order to make it a kangaroo court for his own.
Yep.
And he is not saddled with the legacy of not respecting the courts. I mean, so just in the historical perspective, Trump is furious with the courts. And he had one tweet where he said so-called judge, which is just kind of the way ordinary people speak, you know, but He's respected the rulings. You know, he went back and tried to rewrite. He hasn't shown. He's respected the institutions of democracy.
Well, let's wait till it's over and let's see what happens when they actually decide.
Thus far, I can't in good conscience say he's done anything that's made me worried. I mean, I was happy. I was like, oh, what's going to happen here? But he's been okay with the courts.
So Franklin Roosevelt, I'm glad you brought that up, and it's something I would like to give some thought to because I think it's worth bringing up, not just because of packing the court, because Franklin Roosevelt came into a country that was still in the throes of a depression and decided to reorganize the country around the lines of what many thought was socialism, you know, and the Supreme Court knocked him down on certain things that he tried to do in terms of reorganizing the economic structure of the country, right? And then he tried to pack the court, all right? So there's no question that he thought that he was going to win. Right. And so is the difference only that he was a good guy and Trump portrays himself as a bad guy? That may be one thing. But eventually Roosevelt turned out to be somebody who really could lead the country through tremendous chaos in the world and disarray in the world, namely World War II. Right.
So
that rejiggered the economy so that it looked like he had actually fixed the economy when, in fact,
are you saying you're hoping for a world war to bring Trump in?
No, not at all. Not at all, because it wouldn't figure the same way. Let's just, one thing about Franklin Roosevelt was that he understood the office of the presidency. He understood when he was breaking the rules that he was breaking the rules. You don't get the sense from this guy that he has a deep understanding of what actually the procedures, the rules are. And
he doesn't. He doesn't.
And that. And that's a part of it that people are picking up in a visceral way that I think is very disturbing, because it leads to a sense of, Franklin Roosevelt had an idea. It was very clear. I'm going to do this. And you may not like it, but this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to reorganize the way, I'm going to feed people. That was his basic thing. First, I'm going to
round up the Japanese and put them in camps. No, no, no. I'm going to pack the court.
Correct.
Yeah.
But first, the first thing he did was, I'm going to feed all these people that can't be fed.
Yes.
And I don't care how many rich people get mad at me. So, whatever. This guy is not, can you tell me what his strategy and his plan is?
No.
Can you tell me what he wants? Can you tell me what positive or negatives he's trying to achieve? It's very
hard. He quotes Alex Jones and Fox News as if they're intelligence sources.
Who does?
It's crazy. Yeah.
I'm going to add to your argument about Roosevelt and what I think is missing in that, or another part of that argument, which is that we have to try to judge people in the time and place which with mm-hmm. which with which they lived or whatever.
In which they lived.
And Roosevelt was, this is not, Roosevelt wasn't president in 2017. Right. So rounding up Japanese and putting them in camps or Muslims and putting them in camps in 2017 would be quite the act of a much more evil person.
No, it was a terrible thing to round up the Japanese and put them in camps. It was.
But to do it today would take a different, Franklin Roosevelt, if he were president today, the mm-hmm. same personality type, mm-hmm. certainly would never think of doing such a thing. You know, somebody coming from his point. But in those days, it seemed right. within the realms of possibility. And similarly, I guess,
they weren't,
the court they institutions.
Detention centers, actually, where the Japanese were held.
Okay. Detention centers. Why? So,
keep throwing that in your face.
I don't know. I don't think that packing the court when he suggested doing it was actually the same thing as it would seem like today. I don't know that, but I just have a feeling. Like, if somebody suggested packing the court today, there's just no way. It's like you cannot possibly even conceive of doing that.
Well, the issue's already been settled.
No, but back then, people thought it might be reasonable, you know? Like, it's just, not because it's been settled. I guess it's a different time. That's all I'm saying.
I think drawing the distinction, you know, why is Roosevelt good and Trump bad, is because Roosevelt really was, for the most part, despite things I wish he'd never done, well-meaning for the democratic order. He really was. And he came to it honestly, you know? He was somebody who was living in Teddy Roosevelt's shadow for much of his life and following his footsteps, whether it was, you know, police commissioner or governor of New York, whatever it was.
This is what they said about George W. Bush.
This is what they said about George W. He actually, George W. Bush knew a lot more about the presidency than Donald Trump does. That doesn't mean that I like the way he was president. But all I'm saying is that I think it's a really good question you're asking, and so I have to come back next week and answer.
All right.
And every week. Got that. Well, let me ask you a question before this show ends. I just want to ask her, because she's probably the only person I can answer this, because you're going to get into Gitmo anyway. I don't know, about 5 or 6 detainees, whatever you want to call them, you know, they release them to different countries, to Oman or wherever, they send them back to Pakistan. But like 6 of them were released to Uruguay. And I could, why? Uruguay's like, it's such a progressive country. So yeah. Like, why Uruguay?
Because we could make a deal with them. And so the idea was, which countries, given that we weren't going to take any, because we're too, you know, good for that, that which countries could our diplomats could we arrange a deal with to take these guys, and with some kind of security that, you know, they would be watched to some extent. I'm sure there were huge release issues, and who knows what the arrangements were. We actually don't know them yet. But it's interesting that you say that, because the Uruguayan detainees, particularly one, has been tremendously unhappy and has made it, I don't know if you know this, if you followed it in the press.
There?
Yeah, in Uruguay.
Really?
He's been complaining about, oh my God, it's been horrible. And I actually stopped watching. He just was miserable. He wanted to be with his family. He didn't want to be in Uruguay. He wanted to be in a country that he recognized, you know, that seemed culturally like a home to him.
Well, it's a very European country, you know.
Well, so it's a good question in that regard.
They could send me there. I mean, I'm seriously considering that as a place to like.
But that's why, because the mandate became, look, we got to get these guys out of here. We don't know where to put them. Let's just talk to everybody we know and see what deals we can make to arrange for this. What do you want in exchange for this? Because we couldn't bring them here.
I mean, it's such a, I don't know, open society, legalized marijuana. You have a president who's sitting in the waiting room of the local hospital waiting his turn. President of the country is waiting his turn. That famous picture of him.
Really?
Sitting there.
Oh, I don't know so much about Uruguay. Is that a communist country or something?
I've been there many times.
Is it democracy?
Yeah, it's a democracy.
Market economy?
Wonderful, wonderful democracy. Beautiful country.
Free press?
Legalized marijuana, free press. Did I mention legalized marijuana?
You've said legalized marijuana 3 times.
That's what happens with short-term memory. Right.
It's a beautiful country. It's a very free country. That's why. Why would they send them there?
So you want to talk about Gitmo?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Why, you guys don't want to?
No, I do.
She's an expert.
I always want to talk about.
Yeah, I know. Like you see the way they don't care
Guantanamo,
about it.
You know, this is like
home. We're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, so can you give us some inside information about? Yeah, I know you are like.
I have no inside information, but I have information.
Yeah.
Hot Tim asks the tough questions, you know.
So,
because she does a lot of...
He's asking about a friend, actually.
So give him one. What do you
think? Do you know...
Muhammad.
Really? Why did you pick Muhammad?
Yeah, he's never going to be tried.
Why did you...
Yeah, Khalid Sheikh Muhammad, he's never going to be tried, man. This is such a ridiculous...
Should thing. He be tried?
Of course. No, he should be allowed to live his life out on the beach in Guantanamo.
You're being sarcastic.
Yeah, no, of course not. He tried. There should be some accounting for 9/11. These guys should be tried. And that should be it. And
the civil trial or military trial?
Well, would I have preferred? Listen, let me tell you something. At this point, after 15 years, I'll take any trial. Yeah. But they can't even get to that.
Right.
They set up this whole military commission system, first under Bush, then under Obama, and they can't prosecute anybody. And why? Because they tortured people. And when you torture people, you cannot present evidence in court, even in a military commission, as the rules they've defined for, have it.
So is torture working or not working?
Wait, before, so, wait, she says something important.
But isn't that one guy going to testify now?
Hold on. You know, you guys are a little slow on the uptake. I got to tell you. You didn't hear what was contained in that answer.
What?
That Barack Obama covered for them torturing him because he knew the reason they couldn't bring him to trial was because he had been tortured. So Obama was ready to let him just sit there.
No. Obama was told by a task force that he commissioned when he first came and he said, I'm going to close it. Then he commissions all these task forces that are supposed to think about things. Then they decide, one of these task forces, that they should revive the military commissions. That was not on Obama's plate to start with. They told him they could do this despite torture. They said, we're going to try these guys. We're not going to use tortured evidence. We're not going to, use tortured confessions. We're just going to have clean trials. And it turned out they couldn't do it.
Right.
They actually couldn't
do it. So they went back, Mr. President, there's no way we can try this guy unless we're going to admit the torture we did. And he said, all right, let him.
No, I don't think he did that. I think he said, let's whittle down. So there's two parts of Guantanamo.
Just talking about Khalid Sheikh Muhammad, not
No, I think Obama, just like every other, person who works within the federal court system, believes that if you'd brought them here, I know that everybody's backed away from this now. Do you know how many people we've tried in federal court that are even one that's been tortured? Okay, there's a way to do it. And let me just give you an example of if we really wanted to try the guy, and I understand the symbolism of 9/11, and I, for one, would love to see these guys tried, because I think it would be a very healing moment for the American public. I think 9/11, for those of us who still remember 9/11, not aren't too young.
He was dancing on the rooftops in Jersey.
Yeah, no.
Unbelievable. I was working
Khalid
here.
Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was indicted previously for a different plot that was a serious plot, to blow up planes over the Pacific. And our Justice Department decided not to try him for that because that is a clean evidence trial. That was before he was tortured. They could have tried him for that. Put him away. Serious terror. That's, carries life penalty, right? And they didn't do that.
Why?
So, because they wanted to try him for the symbolism 9/11. If they wanted to do that, look, when Eric Holder announced that trial was coming to the United States, he said in that same announcement, which forgot to tell the NYPD and court here about, he said, I'm certain that we're going to be able to convict him. And he took a lot of criticism from civil libertarians and who said, how dare you do that? Give him he's got to have a trial. Why did you say that? And probably wasn't the smartest thing to say. Mm-hmm. But he was conveying something.
Yeah.
He was conveying that they were bringing them here. We knew they did 9/11. I know I'm naive. I know that there are people who know more than I do and they don't like when I say this. But I cannot believe that the American people have been deprived of trying. I see people tried in court all the time for terrorism. There's never a question that they're going to be guilty. The evidence is often very spotty. A lot of it's illusion. You know how many times they mention Osama bin Laden rather than the defendant themselves in court when they're trying some of these lesser guys? How they could not have tried Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who's not a lesser guy, and these and the other 9/11 defendants, and not done it with the same kind of distance that I don't understand. And a couple of years ago, sort of throughout the government, there was a sense that we're not going to try these guys here. It's just not going to happen. There are a lot of prosecutors prior to that who had said forever, let's try him here, let's bring him here, Eric Holder being one.
Why do you think then, what's that kid's name? Sean Albrecht? Is that his name? The Silk Road kid?
Oh, yeah.
Why do you think the federal government came down on that kangaroo court of a trial And they give the kid life in prison without the possibility of parole for the managing a website. Himself? No, he didn't kill himself. No, he's still fighting it. For managing a website. And but I mean, why don't they just do that with these guys? Why don't they just railroad them into life sentences? I don't understand.
I mean, they're already in a life sentence.
He has a life sentence.
Yeah. No, but they could just bring him here, try him.
No, they're not in a life sentence. They're not in a life sentence. The 9/11 guys, they have no sentence.
Well,
no,
if he
that's the whole point.
He's not even charged with a crime.
They're in a constructive life sentence.
But why don't they do that?
They haven't been convicted, but they'll be there for life.
Why don't they just do some,
well, that's,
some
I mean,
scam that, trial?
That's what I'm trying to say about these other terrorism trials. They're very, to the when you watch them, there's a lot of, you know, the cause and effect. There's also a large gap, which is, did you express jihadist inclinations? Did you do this with or without the FBI? Doesn't matter, because you were willing to do it. And as they say to the jury, would you have been willing to do it? And they're like, no, not me. and, you know, a lot of these trials are problematic. And they're very worrisome. And what a lot of defense attorneys and others have said is, don't do this with terrorism trials because they will bleed into the system and they will affect other kinds of trials. And then what we're finding now is that you look at how Guantanamo has affected our own courts, you know, and somebody someday will write, it won't be me, will write a book on this and just sort of like the way in which terrorism conditions of confinement, starting with conditions of confinement, starting with the kinds of evidence they can put in and they can't put in. I mean, it's a serious. So, I mean, I wrote a book about this. I'm very impassioned.
But the thing is, like that Juan Padilla, is that his name? The
Jose Padilla.
Well, Juan Jose. It's all the same. If I run into your kitchen, I say Juan Jose. Someone's going to turn around.
No, but, Muhammad.
Oh, that's right. they kept him, you know, without a lawyer in solitary confinement for a year because he was accused.
Three years.
Was he the shoe bomber?
He was the dirty. He was the dirty bomber.
Under the underwear bomber.
Whoa!
But he was never charged with that.
Correct. He was the guy that John Ashcroft went on television in Russia, to mention a country, and said, "We got him. We got a really serious terrorist." And by the way,
American citizen.
And by the way, the guy you talked about, yes, American citizen, the guy you talked about that was going to testify, Abu Zubaydah, right?
Right.
The word is that Abu Zubaydah is the person that turned them on to Padilla, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah. And one of the controversies is that the FBI says they got that information before torture. And people who defend torture say, no, they didn't get that. But just so you know how the Padilla fits.
I have some
questions. I'm sorry, in the weeds. But
he's an American citizen accused of a crime.
He was an American citizen who was declared an enemy combatant and put in to a brig. And his lawyer woke up one day. She was going to court to see him. She gets a phone call from the prosecutor and says, I'm sorry, he's disappeared. She goes, what do you mean? He goes, he's not here anymore. He's not here. And it turned out that he had been whisked away and taken, they didn't know where, but they found out to the brig in South Carolina.
So they drove him crazy eventually.
What would the odds of and what would the consequences be of an OJ like outcome to a trial of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed?
Zero.
Some Muslim guy is on the jury and just hangs the jury. That's it.
Oh, you think he's going to say he's not guilty?
Well, because...
Are you kidding? The Muslim guy be the first... No.
Yeah, the first one to say...
Well, let me ask you.
Well, he'll be the lawyer.
You will make a deal.
You can say what you want because he's going to erase it. So just mark down the time. We're taking out that. As a matter of fact, anything he says that gets a laugh, make sure you cut that out. What are the odds of finding a Muslim guy... kind of like the guys you and I both know.
Yeah.
Who has a big belief in conspiracy theories, who believes that maybe all the Jews didn't come to work on 9/11.
All of them.
No, the ones that worked at the World Trade Center.
You and I both know. You and I both know people who believe these things.
When we
what
have
if what, one of these people winds up on the jury?
That's my point.
Have you ever been to jury selection?
Yes.
Okay. Do you really think one of those guys would get on the jury?
If they tell the truth.
Yeah, but we had a guest here, Norm. You remember, we And he's
and not if they exhaust their challenges.
He's one of the most, you know, crazy people. In but when we get him here, when he's speaking in public,
I can hear you.
Dad, it's not you.
So the answer.
So when he came here in public, he didn't say it. You know
who was that?
You weren't here.
That's somebody exactly my point. We had somebody on the
other. Yeah, we did.
He believed it all that, and then when we spoke to me, he pretended he didn't believe it.
And that's what I'm saying. In
but so the let's say the odds are low. Now, what would the just as a thought experiment? What would the consequences be to a
hung jury?
Yeah, to
they have a retrial.
A retrial.
I think that's what these guys.
But why do you even need that trial?
They're never going to find him innocent. That's
like when Osama bin Laden was caught,
in the United States.
Boom. Yeah, so
because we live in right. Well, Obama we did not detain people under Obama the way we used to detain them under Bush. We just didn't.
Yeah.
And we often targeted people and killed them. It was just, you know, some people will say it was just too messy to bring them in. We just didn't, you know, between the fight between the federal courts and the military commissions, and we knew they were guilty, and that was it.
So
which is really not a good
What about that kid that they killed the one
Anwar
guy?
Anwar Laki.
These names.
She's really good with the Arabic names.
Yeah, she is. I was like, this is my phone list. How do you know all this? Erase.
Cut that out.
So Anwar Laki he was not a kid, but he was.
No, but they killed his son.
They killed his son and then his daughter.
But one thing.
His daughter was killed this year.
Really? How old was she?
And they say it was not targeted, but.
But he was that. The 16-year-old was definitely targeted.
Tony kills me. He just
Yeah, the 16. They say he wasn't, but.
They killed him a week later. He's an American citizen. Yeah. His father may or may not have had something to do with terrorism. That was never proven.
This is why you killed him.
But then they kill a 16-year-old son a week later. Why?
There's like a countable number of these horrible situations. This guy gets killed or somebody gets killed by some Israeli soldier and you're like up in arms about it. Then 450,000 Syrian civilians were killed by other Arabs. And it's not even on your radar.
What are you talking about? We talk
it's
about that all the time.
It's all about who's going to kill it.
Yeah.
It's just like the.
Well, it is different when the government.
I told you all.
The United States government is ordering the killing of a 16-year-old American citizen. That is different.
If only Israel would bomb Syria, then you'd care about Syria.
She said I'm right.
Yeah, I heard. You are right. You know, I mean, I'm not.
If those animals want to kill them.
I agree with you about the fact that these are horrible fact patterns. I just always am astonished how you only focus on the fact patterns which kind of implicate the villains in your mind you're looking to collect evidence against the United States government and Israel. That's it. These are your enemies. No, I know him.
Hold on a second. Yeah. I thought Obama that was an impeachable offense.
What was that?
Ordering and whether he did order the murder of that 16-year-old American child or the American citizen.
Yeah.
I don't know. I assume. Well, I don't know about the child. Seems
this
to be
is
up
one
in
of
air,
the dangerous things about Obama.
That's an impeachable offense.
Is that this is one of the dangerous things about Obama's legacy, which is that he was so sure that he trusted himself and that he trusted the people around him to be constitutionally aware and to behave legally, and that he had good guys on his team and not nefarious bad guys, that he created a structure of government that came down to trust me government. And when you lot of people warned him, don't do this. You have to build in structures. You can't just have the president decides who gets killed on the kill list. You can't have that because I know you trust yourself, but what if there's somebody in the office you don't trust? And lo and behold, Donald Trump gets elected.
Right.
And so yes, on the merits of the individual, you know, killings of American citizens, this is, you know, something that is the legacy. This Obama owns this, but even more to the point, leaving it just out there without any kind of protective structure.
Because his enemies don't even want to. I mean, the Republicans fought him every turn. They fought him, but they didn't mention that.
No,
they could have impeached him for that.
Well,
they would have been right.
Yeah,
but this is Obama's court packing. This is where he thinks I'm on the side of right. So institutions be damned.
Now the other thing about that you mentioned about, you know, people around the world being killed in these incredible wars and struggles, and the part you didn't say, but it's implicit, is the refugees. And, you know, these refugees of however many millions, of which, you know, estimates are that half of them are children. And we should, you know, and so the answer that you should give next time he asks you and I'm not here is,
you have to be here.
As a matter of fact, you can just say it now.
Yeah.
We can rewind it.
Is that you can only take care of that which is connected to you. And this is the country that's connected to you. Yeah. And it's there, you can hold this country accountable and you can work. And that's the right answer, unless you want to become a UN worker.
I have an answer for you. I can answer that.
I know what he's going to say.
No, Tony. What am I going to say?
You're going to say the children don't listen to this show, so you don't care.
No, this is what I'm going to say.
Here it comes.
We are responsible for knocking over the dominoes.
That's correct.
Which is Syria. It is our moral failing, our moral responsibility. Colin Powell said, you break it, you own it.
Right.
And Obama, the thing that bothered me about Obama more than anything, and it's maybe related to what you're saying, he seemed to feel that the moral responsibility of the United States began and end with when he became president. What happened before was no longer our moral responsibility because I wasn't president then. So whatever we did to Iraq, let's just go home. Whatever happens, happens. It's not me.
But they all do like that.
They
go to war. They don't plan a 50-year war. They plan a 5-year war.
Syria is not some country, nothing to do with us, where they're killing them.
Right.
We caused
it.
But let me ask you something.
So that's why I'm connected to it. I said, we did this to them. And now we're pretending our problem?
No, you're absolutely right. However, the domino effect. Tell me the first one. The first domino started with what?
Iraq.
Nope. Before that.
The Sykes-Picot Treaty in World War One.
No.
That was a pretty good answer, actually.
It was pretty good. Something where you come from.
The great tragedy of Israel.
There you go. That was the first domino.
That's why the Syrians are killing each other. Took everything down.
Well, the question is, does Obama now think that he made a mistake? I'm going to narrow this in terms of not holding accountable members of the Bush administration for, you know, legal violations, for procedural violations, for strategic things that, I mean, he refused. He was like, we're going to go forward, we're going to be, you know, live in peace, et cetera, et cetera.
But then he did them himself, according to you.
And, well, he curtailed detention, he tried to close Guantanamo, but not fast enough. He ended torture. Yeah, I think the drone policy was morally horrific. And I understand that it made sense in terms of strategy, but really, have you seen results?
No.
The backlash every now and then I do Al Jazeera. Do you ever listen to what happens on Al Jazeera?
I do. I'm sorry.
No, but you know.
My mother only listens to Al Jazeera.
I only read Al Jazeera.
But it's interesting. They tell a different story about the world. And it's a story that if you hear it and you hear all the things that are going on that are harming children and families, and you get to sense of how this feels in a different part of the world.
But they lie a lot.
Okay.
Okay,
so let's say they do. But just to get, there are, to your point about Syria, that there is a... that there is so much suffering in the world right now, and it's gonna and we're, you know, Americans are very anxious right now. Three people, this is anecdotal, but three people I talked to on the phone in the past 2 weeks, at one point in the phone call said to me, "Hold on, I'll be right back." And these were business calls; these were not friends. "Hold on, I'll be right back." And then they got back on and they said, "I'm sorry, I'm at the doctor's. I'm like, you're having a business call." People are anxious. I'm just saying, I think, I'll bet you, if you did some kind of survey of, you know, our doctors getting more calls, people are really upset. And they're not upset necessarily about a specific thing. They're just upset because deep inside, we know that the world as we understood it is sort of disappearing like gossamer threads before our eyes. And how are we going to fix that?
So let me ask you something. Is it the word as we understood it, or is it the word as we try to control it? Which will be the right sentence?
I have to Google gossamer thread because I don't know.
so do you? I think it's not how the world is going on. I think that it's a failure of foreign policies for years that we thought that we will be the police. American.
Yeah.
All right.
If he says it enough times, it turns out to be true.
Yeah. So we try to control the world and be the police and do, the policemen of the world and do all this. And this is not what we expected.
Well, the blowback from everything. I mean, 9/11 was a blowback from you know, the Russian invasion to Afghanistan.
Absolutely. America's chickens, you know, come home to roost.
Yeah. I mean, look at Greece now. I don't know what's going to happen.
Right, right.
They got 60,000 refugees at the old airport. They don't have jobs for the people, the Greek citizens. They don't have housing for them, schooling. Like, who's going to pay for all this? What's going to happen to these people if they don't have jobs? They're going to become criminals.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
That people who are not invested in the society around them, who don't understand, are will end up being destructive because they have nothing to protect.
And they have no choice.
And obviously, Taliban was created by us.
Come on.
Yes, it was.
All right.
Hold on. Why?
I don't have any time for this party line nonsense. I want to.
Well,
ask, we have an expert here. I want to ask her.
Well, I'm asking her. Didn't we create Taliban?
We set the conditions. I mean, that you're talking about the Soviet. Yes.
Yeah, against the Soviet.
So they were our allies.
Oh, the expert said yes.
They were our allies. That's not our allies.
We create them. Didn't we train them?
You got your answer. She said no.
Didn't we train them?
We trained the people tunnels. Who became the Taliban when we were fighting the Soviets in Afghanistan. We did not. We didn't train them to become Muslim fanatics to hate us.
Oh, you had to say Muslim in a sentence, right, didn't
anyway,
you?
Anyway,
but there's always blowback.
Okay, I have a question.
But blowback is only. It's only blowback against us. We've never responded to anything that was, you know, that could be considered their deserved blowback. You know, it's only
who's
it's
there?
All, the people on the other end. Always a one-way equation. Anything we do,
it's not a one-way street,
blowback. But anything they do, we should never have responded.
Well, that's
to.
Not. But the point that's is, so, it's not good for us. That's, I mean, what's the point?
I'm afraid she has to leave, and I want to ask.
If our solution isn't making it worse for us, what's the point?
I want to ask a question before you. Can
okay,
I?
Go ahead.
All right. So if we go back in time,
I'll just erase.
If we go back in time, and you in charge, is Guantanamo Bay a good project or no? Would you do it or not?
Have you listened to anything she said?
Okay.
No. Okay. I'm talking about because
she
said.
Did you see my face?
No. I know. I know what you're saying about the trials, but I'm saying
Guantanamo was absolutely a mistake from day one. It never should have happened, and
we got a lot of information though. So information versus.
Let me give you some facts.
Okay.
There were in the history of Guantanamo, there were 774 people that were there, detainees that were there.
Yeah.
George Bush, who was not soft on terror, looked at those 800 people and he said, "They got to go home. These are not the guys we thought they were." So he let 524 of them out. Okay? So just to give you an example of what kind of information.
Yeah.
So, information about what? Information about the battlefield from which they were moved how many thousands of miles so that any kind of tactical information was irrelevant? Mm-hmm. You know what? One time I was at Guantanamo Bay and the person in charge of it told me, I asked him this question. I'm like, it's been years. You really think these people have informational value? And he goes, yes, because someday there could be a head of Al-Qaeda and that we don't know and the people here will know him. So what kind of informational value are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't think we could have gotten that in a regular court system where we traded information for whatever for charging? Why on earth do you have to put people into a system that challenges the very principles of American democracy, which is due process? You're guilty of something, you get tried, or you make them prisoners of war, which we refuse to do, and you treat them like prisoners of war that you keep for the duration of hostilities, and you figure out, instead of running away from it, how you're going to define the end of hostilities and what you're going to do at the end of hostilities. Instead, we said, I don't mean me, but our government said, you know what? This is too complicated. This is really hard. We're not going to figure this out. We're just going to do this. And they did this. And to this day, with taxpayer money to $11 million per detainee at Guantanamo Bay per year, that is a lot of taxpayer money that we are using to say, oh, let's just keep these people here because it's too difficult to figure out what to do with them. There's not enough evidence to try them, and we can't let them go because they're dangerous.
And the Supreme Court has ruled on this?
No, because the Supreme Court has ruled on whether or not they can have habeas and challenge their detention in federal court, which as of 2008, they can do. They can go to federal court, and what happened was they put it back in a specific court, the D.C. Court, and the lower court said, it started to look at these and just to be quick about this, and said a number of these people should not be held. And then the circuit court said, listen, you should not be trusting the evidence you're trusting. You should trust the evidence of the U.S. government. We're reversing this decision. And so that's where it stands.
It doesn't get appealed.
Yeah, no. And this is where it stands. And so there's been no releases on habeas for quite a long
time. Why doesn't it go to the Supreme Court?
There have been a couple of cases that are going up to the Supreme Court, and there are a number of cases that are both in the habeas, not a number, but a couple mm-hmm. cases that are both in the habeas process and being decided at Guantanamo Bay. And so there's sort of like, well, we're going to hold up the habeas one so they get decided. I mean, it's all a little, you know,
I have my two unfair. Questions now.
Go ahead.
But I'm just saying, I mean, it's...
It was a great question.
It was a terrible idea. No, it was a great question. No, terrible idea.
Don't fold. I forgot the second question. All right, the first question is this. There are people, not Dick Cheney's, like Leon Panetta and some other, you probably know, could rattle them off much better than I, who have all the information and feel that torture benefited us in certain instances. What's your answer to that?
But they did an investigation.
Hold on. I'm not one of those people who says torture doesn't work, whatever that means. I think torture could work. It could work on a lot of people. Certainly would work on us. We're not, you know, haven't taken any training course.
It's wonderful.
No, let me just
say. She said you would never say that.
Let her finish.
Of course I'm going to let her finish.
But the fact that it works has nothing to do with whether or not you should use it. And let me tell you why. Because, and this is what people say to me, well, what if somebody, you know, took somebody you cared about and we said we had to torture, somebody you loved and we had, okay.
Yeah.
Me saying torture that person, you know what? Then I get tried. And I get tried for violating the law because I thought it was more important to save that person's life than to honor the law about torture. And you know what? If I went to jail for that, for somebody I love, that's what happens. And to make torture the law of the land and you are not prosecutable for it, I'm sorry. That is horrible. And that is wrong.
Can the president make that decision?
Oh, now you're upsetting me now. Go ahead.
What do you mean?
If it comes, if there's a big bomb, we talked about before.
And the president, could he make what decision?
My feeling has been always that, that I always say like, I know if they tortured me, it would work and I can't be the only one. So I always feel like it can work. And although this ticking time bomb scenario is usually bogus, there are scenarios. And I always felt that what the rules should be, given the fact, it all ties together, even the fact that the president can sit in his armchair and drone any innocent child all over the world. Like this is not the most worrisome power the president has, that the president should be the only one who can order the torture, and it has to be a system and a documentation of it and a disclosure of it such that he can be judged and held accountable for it.
I do not think torture should be any policy. I don't think there should be a torture warrant. I don't care if it works, I'm saying.
Is there never a scenario where you'd say, do what you got to do, we can't let
no,
this blow up?
No, you don't plan for it, you don't do it. If it happens ad hoc someplace, you go to trial for it or you're held accountable for it and you go to jail for it unless a jury finds you innocent. Because like if you're a woman and you kill your husband because he's beating you and you do this in self defense.
They usually let them I'm saying if you're the president and you know.
No, it should not be structurally, there should not be torture. And let me tell you something else about torture. While it can work, obviously, with some people, it can also not work. And one of the things that an interrogator in Iraq once said that really stuck with me was, yeah, it worked. I got the guy. He told me where the safe house was. We got there. We sent in our men. He was right. They were there. He just didn't tell us it was booby trapped. And they lost everybody. And so torture, to say it works, what they are saying, like in the Senate report, is it doesn't work because it didn't get us actionable intelligence. This is not who we are. This is not who we want to be. We have remedies. If somebody in a, and by the way, name me one ticking time bomb scenario.
No, I said they're usually bogus.
Yeah, not usually.
But always.
There's never been one.
Why do they always blow planes and not airports?
Yeah. Shh.
Oh
my God!
You heard what?
She's so you have to be a regular. You're amazing.
Did you see that? What's his name said that the thing that worries him the most is airplanes. The worry about airplanes. The head of Homeland Security, Kelly. What thing worries you the most is an explosive on an airplane, which is extraordinary considering we've had 15 years of thinking about how to keep explosives off of airplanes.
Right, but why don't they do like a Timothy McVeigh thing in an airport?
Is there really a moral difference in your mind between torturing somebody to find out where a dirty bomb might be or droning a tent in Afghanistan because you think there's a terrorist?
Yes.
You see a difference?
Yeah, because one's a military strike. that, you know, is a capacity that we use, and that, you know, Obama's claim to fame is that while it was imprecise when he took office, if you look at the statistics he claimed, it got more and more precise. But if you look at the reports of Amnesty International and a number of the human rights organizations in the region, it's really a question of who's getting killed, if they're militants or civilians, and if we can really tell them apart. And now with Trump, and this is why I come back to, you know, not containing the power, Trump is dropping things out of the air, drones and missiles, at a point of something like 5-1 of what Obama did. So, you know, the idea of trust me government just was wrong.
But it could be the other way too. You could certainly find a scenario where killing the civilians' family of the terrorist is more difficult to justify than the torture of a known terrorist with blood on his hands to try to get information. In other words, it's like...
If he's a known terrorist, try the guy.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying to get information. Like, if you have a known terrorist and you capture him you torture him, you're torturing a murderer as opposed to a drone strike killing an innocent.
Okay, but let me tell you something else about torture. The thing that bothers me also about torture is that I believe deep inside that if somebody thinks that they can get information from torture, they're not going to do the homework they want them to do 2 months before, 2 weeks before, 2 years before.
I agree with that. You need to get a short circuit to get straight to the torture.
Right, because don't worry, you know, we can always torture. No, we need an intelligence service that is better than we had on 9/11, and we have one that's better than
we
had on 9/11.
But also, this is the thing about torture. You're not torturing terrorists or murderers or criminals. You're torturing people that a lot of times haven't even been accused of a crime. So you're
not a lot of times, yeah.
So you're torturing innocent people to find out if they're guilty.
Well, they don't get accused.
And you're willing
of crime.
To drone people.
Oh no, that's not true.
If they're picked up on a battlefield, they're not going to get accused of a crime.
So the real question here is: do the things that the people who created our country put in, you know, containment, legitimacy, due process, evidence, do these things matter in the 21st century? And that's the debate we're having. We had it with Bush.
What did you just say? Just say that again. Yeah. What you just said. About they were picked up on the battlefield.
When you pick up a foreigner on the battlefield, you don't charge them with crimes.
But what's a battlefield?
That's their country.
If the U.S. invades your country, now you live in a battlefield.
If the U.S. military.
I mean, Iraq should tell you.
There's very few scenarios I can think of where the U.S. military picks up a foreigner for whatever reason and that you have to charge them with a crime. I've never heard of that.
Well,
in Iraq, no. Okay. First of all, if you define that's not right. And if you define the global battlefield the way they've defined it, the global war on terror, you basically have a global battlefield. And prior to 9/11, we arrested people who blew up the U.S. embassies.
Why are you pointing at me?
I mean, like in Afghanistan.
You keep pointing at me every time you say.
I'm talking to the listeners.
Blowing up.
It's just a natural thing to do.
You are way too sensitive. Are you kidding? I would do the opposite. That blew up the U.S. embassies, right? And we brought them to trial. They were foreigners. We brought them here. We tried them.
That because it was a U.S. embassy? It's American soil?
Yeah, no, but we've brought pirates here that have... Yeah, of course there has to be, in theory. Actually, what you said about policemen before is true, that we started bringing people here who were global terrorists who didn't necessarily have an American target that, you know, was specific, like the embassy, like that. But yes, we do that. Or we did in the past. Now, what Trump and his people have indicated is that they're not going to bring them here anymore. They're going to take them to Guantanamo and, you know, re-add people to Guantanamo. Nobody new has been brought there since March of 2008. This would be a major change in direction. And hopefully to, you know.
And how will they pick them up?
Hopefully my family will.
Hopefully your family gets 3 square meals.
I had a couple of chances to go to Iraq during the war. Yep. And more than one officer or soldier told me that. And they pick up guys, and they took us into jail before the whole Abu Ghraib thing came out. They said that they would pick up any military age male, which is like 8 to 80. When an IED went off, they would pick up anybody that was standing around watching or anybody that was fleeing the scene. So that pretty much covers every male.
No, okay, you're getting at one of the basic... I got to go. But you got to get at one of the basic things that happened in the war on terror, which is we substituted quantity for precision. We thought more was better, and that was Guantanamo. You know, we get 800 people, somebody there must be guilty.
Yeah.
You know, or we'll surveil every single person, you know, that we can, and then we'll hear something. No, the idea of criminal justice is actually based on smarts, which is you want to figure out who's guilty, who there's evidence, who individual or group of individuals is trying to hurt you, not let's have everything, and then all of a sudden, you know, then we'll know something. This is a huge mistake. And we have not recovered from it, because once you have those powers and you're in government, no matter who you are, you don't want to give them up.
I have one other actually good question. You don't have to answer. You can just say, I have to go, or you can answer it.
I have to go, but go ahead.
Have you ever thought about because it seems to happen to every president,
what?
That if you became president, what of the, forgive the word, idealistic views that you hold so dear, do you think you would maybe come off of or feel pressure to come off of? In the way that Senator Obama had a totally different view of what he thought was right and wrong than President Obama did. This always does happen. You would be the total exception to the rule if it didn't happen to you. You ever wonder about that? Like, what if I was really in that office and I really got...
I have wondered about it. And I think it's a really difficult thing. And I think Obama tried to drone as few people as he could, you know, and to be very precise about it. I think that, and this is what bothers me about the State Department, I don't like war. I know that's I am totally idealistic, but I would put every single bit of energy into taking care of the children around the world, period, the end. That is what needs to be done. That is what will make the future safe for our children and our grandchildren. And that's what needs to be done. And I would put every penny I could into helping children.
Is it okay if he puts in Battle Hymn Republic?
And by the way, it would change the political environment, because every country is worried about the children that are growing up to be disenfranchised and angry and without. And that's what I would do. And that's, nobody's doing that. And nobody's talking about it. And it's extremely sad. So that's what I would do.
That's great. Well, thank you so much.
Snowden.
Oh, God. I think Snowden should have been pardoned.
Would you like to share any contact or Twitter or something?
Like a website
for you?
Feed.
Yeah, or your website?
Buy your book,
CNS.
No, mine.
Yours?
Yeah, that I use all the time. Karen Greenberg 3 or Karen Greenberg 3.
Website?
Center on National Security.
Yeah, Center on National Security.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Yeah. Yes.
And I just want to say,
aside from my book.
We have to, yes. Go ahead.
Need to read my book.
The Least Worst Place.
No, not that one.
You mean get someone's
Rogue Justice.
To me. Isn't that
Rogue
what you meant?
Justice, because it's about everything we talked about today. Okay. I deal with in this book, which is why.
I just want to say, aside from it being a very good episode, it means a lot to me that two of the people who are dearest to me finally got to meet and argue.
Thank you.
Oh. Tony and Hata.
Yeah, me. But you have to promise.
Way more reasonable. Yeah.
Karen, we definitely have to get you again. You are like amazing. Tony, would you like to show your information?
Totally at odds.
Tony
Darrow and Facebook. I don't know.
Every time you even see a little point to me or
Steven. At China Bria, and follow the Comedy Cellar.
Deepu.
Hi.
Thank you.
Karen, I'll take you up.
Deepu?
At R2 Deepu. Thank you.
And live from AmericaPodcast.com. All the links are there. Thank you.
You can, if you like me, just donate to the Trump campaign.
You were listening to Live from America Podcast. To contact us, please go to www.livefromamericapodcast.com. Brought to you by the Comedy Cellar and Rethink Production.